Blog Talk Radio.
Down in the Big Easy, Drew Brees might be getting old, but he's far from dead. You have just drafted the NFC South Preview Edition of the Fantasy Flex. Welcome to another edition of the Fantasy Flex, where for the next half hour, it's all things NFC South. I am Nate, over on Twitter, at Miller_RotoDad. Where can the people find you, Mr. Brad Wallace?
They can follow me at UGA Good.
Okay, let's get straight to some NFC South projections. After starting 216 regular season games with an additional 11 playoff games in his career and approaching his 38th birthday, does Drew Brees have yet another big year in him working with a very talented young group of receivers?
I think so. Since 2004, Drew Brees has played in at least 15 games every season. Brees is the only QB to reach 5,000 passing yards more than once and in back-to-back seasons. He actually did it three seasons in a row from 2011 to 2013. I think even though he's 38, Drew Brees is still going to have a monster season. He may not hit that 5,000-yard mark, but probably just shy.
Okay. Getting into the Saints passing game and talking about Drew Brees, I tend to agree with exactly what you were saying there on him. I'm big on him. I'm thinking he's – I'm going to go ahead and say I think he will outproduce even Cam Newton, the defending MVP. I think Drew Brees is the top fantasy quarterback in this division coming in and a clear top five overall in the league. I want to pinpoint a new addition he's got. He's already working with, you know, those young receivers like Brandon Cooks, who had a big season. Willie Snead put up some nice numbers coming out of – kind of nowhere. And thinking back a few years ago when Marcus Colston was his big guy in that passing game and a big 6'4 target, the Saints took Michael Thomas, a rookie out of Ohio State, in the second round of this year's draft. And I'm thinking he may take over that Colston role, giving the Saints a big 6'3 target to go along with the diminutive Brandon Cooks. What say you on Michael Thomas, Brad?
I would have to agree. Michael Thomas is the second coming of Marcus Colston. That size is going to make him a red zone threat, and I think that shows in his statistics for 2016. I think he's going to catch 10 touchdowns from Drew Brees while racking up 800 receiving yards.
So quite a rookie season. Another guy the Saints added to the passing game is a tight end that some people have been waiting to break out in Indianapolis the last few years, but he always seemed to be kind of stuck in that tight end tandem with Dwayne Allen. Kobe Fleener, you think this guy could even – is he the number three guy, maybe even the number two guy for Drew Brees this season?
Oh, I think he's at least the number three option in that Saints passing offense with – potential to be Drew Brees' number two target as well. Yeah, I see him having a monster season. I mean, just look at what the Saints offense did for Ben Watson last season. I mean, it basically revived his career and made him fantasy relevant again. I think it's safe to say Kobe Fleener, being a lot younger than Ben Watson, is a little bit better of a talent than Ben Watson, at least at this point in Ben Watson's career. So I think Kobe Fleener is – and for a monster season, I have him ranked number seven in my tight end rankings right now.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. It's like, where do you have him ranked? I think he's clear top eight. Very few leagues out there are less than eight teams, I would think. And that makes him a number one tight end going into the season. Does he have 1,000 receiving yards in him in this offense?
Oh, I definitely think so. I have him at 1,100 receiving yards and 8 touchdowns for the season.
Yeah, when you consider Drew Brees and all those 5,000 passing yard seasons, I mean, he approached that number last season.
They got to go to somebody.
Not a stretch to, yeah, it's not a stretch to imagine 3,000 yard receivers in that offense.
Oh, yeah, most definitely.
Okay, well, staying on that quarterback topic, we touched on Cam Newton a bit, Drew Brees even more. There's no real quarterback controversies in the NFC South. Drew Brees, Matt Ryan, Cam Newton, Jameis Winston are all pretty much locked in as their team starters. Absent some injuries, it'll stay that way for the season. How do these four signal callers stack up against one another and overall in the league, Brad?
Well, if we're going strictly by my quarterback rankings, I have Cam Newton as my overall number one quarterback, with Brees coming in at 6. I have Jameis Winston at 16, and then Matt Ryan rounding out my top 20 at number 20. So I think all four of these quarterbacks are going to produce in fantasy leagues, some more than others. Particularly, I think Cam Newton is not – He's going to put up similar numbers to last season, but he won't quite meet those same numbers. So I don't see him repeating as an MVP or finishing as the overall number one fantasy player in leagues. So Brees has that potential to be the most fantasy productive out of all four of the quarterbacks this season.
Okay, well, I'm definitely going to disagree with you on one of those projections, and I see Matt Ryan as a real sleeper going into fantasy leagues this season. Fantasy leagues of all formats, really. Exit Roddy White in that passing game, and yeah, Matt Ryan's thrown to him quite a bit. Roddy White is the Falcons' all-time leading receiver. He's gone now. Enter Mohamed Sanu from Cincinnati, who has been at number one, number two, when they've had injuries in that passing game in Cincinnati, but mostly he's been relegated to a number three, number four guy. I think he's the clear number two guy coming into the season for the Falcons. He can make a real difference. What do you think Matt Ryan can do overall this season, and what can Mohamed Sanu do for him, complementing the stud that is Julio Jones?
I have Matt Ryan at my 20 right now just because I kind of want to see it. I want to see him produce before I believe it. I think he does have top 15, top 10 quarterback potential, especially if that offensive line could stay healthy. I mean, he only threw 21 touchdowns last season. That was his lowest since his rookie season, in which he threw 16 touchdowns. Matt Ryan averages around 25 touchdowns for his career. And he's thrown at least 4,500 yards every year since 2012. So if Matt Ryan can stay upright and that Falcons offensive line can, you know, protect him better, I think, yeah, he has that team top 20 potential. And yeah, adding a weapon like Sanu will help, to go alongside Julio Jones, maybe free up Julio from a few less double coverage scenarios. Help take the top off some of those defenses.
Yeah, and let's keep in mind an important point with Matt Ryan. Last season, his first year in a Kyle Shanahan offense, the two both earned some well-earned flack after the season for some struggles that passing game had. Matt Ryan throwing quite a few interceptions, especially in the red zone. I think he gets more accustomed to the Kyle Shanahan offense. I think Kyle Shanahan and him build a bit better rapport with each other and how to run that offense, the rhythm it should be. And I'm seeing Matt Ryan as an easy top 15 quarterback, maybe even a number one in a 12-team standard league. Touching on Mohamed Sanu, does he have 1,000 yards in him? And maybe, let's say, over under a half dozen touchdowns in his first season with the Falcons?
I mean, I think he could eclipse that 1,000-yard mark. I don't think he is going to personally. That Kyle Shanahan offense really likes to feed that number one X receiver. I think Julio Jones is going to have a monster season. So I see Mohamed Sanu at around 900 receiving yards with the potential to go over 1,000. I just don't think he will. And I've got him at 6 touchdowns for the year.
All right, let's stick in that Atlanta passing game and talk about the tight end situation. Jacob Tammy, a veteran, kind of became really the number two passing option for Ryan a lot of the time last season. He was a steady producer. He doesn't have a lot of upside, but he's got good hands and he's consistent. He could enter the season as a starter. Levine Toilolo, a draft pick a couple years ago, just hasn't really panned out. He's a decent blocker. It's a shame that he hasn't become at least more of a red zone target for the Falcons, because this dude's hot. He could be playing power forward in the NBA. He's never really gotten into the fold as a pass catcher. And another tight end out of Stanford, the Falcons just took him in the third round of the draft. I see some big upside for Austin Hooper. Which one of these guys at tight end is going to see the most targets, say, the first few weeks for the Falcons? And then who ends up the number one guy for the season at tight end in Atlanta?
I think Jacob Tammy starts off as that number one tight end, and we'll see the majority of the, you know, receptions from Matt Ryan. I have to agree with you. Levine Toilolo, 6'7". I don't know why he can't get it together. I don't know if it's his route running ability or if he's just got brick hands. You would think with that kind of size, especially in the red zone, I mean, you would think that Falcons would be able to utilize him as a weapon more. Austin Hooper, third round out of Stanford. I think he's got some upside potential. Not so much in standard leagues, in my opinion, this season. I think he's a good candidate for dynasty and keeper league. Towards the end of the season, I think you'll see the touches start to shift towards Austin Hooper's towards him versus Jacob Tammy. Hopefully he'll learn under the veteran Tammy, and you'll see his touches start to increase as he shifts towards that number one tight end role. I just don't think you see it in his fantasy numbers this season. I think next season is where I would be targeting him, unless you're in a keeper or a dynasty.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you on the dynasty projection for Austin Hooper. I think this guy could be a top 10 tight end for the next several years. I'm going to go ahead and make a bold projection. This could make me look bad. It could make me look smart, but I'm going to say Austin Hooper finishes this season as a top 15 tight end. Want to get into some comparisons, and especially and bring in a receiver we touched on a bit, but Julio Jones could be the number one receiver in the entire league. I think he's easily the number one receiver in this division. All regards to Mike Evans down in Tampa Bay. Let's compare those tandems. Which side would you lean in a comparison between NFC South wide receiver tandems? Mike Evans with Vincent Jackson, or Julio Jones with Mohamed Sanu?
I think if we're strictly just talking about the wide receivers and leaving the tight ends out of it, I have to go Jones and Sanu over Evans and Jackson. Julio Jones is, yeah, like you said, could be the overall number one wide receiver this year. He has that potential. He's a stud. He's only had one season where he missed more than three games. That was 2013, where he only played five. But has only two seasons in which he played all 16 games. So he usually has injury problems that limit him some in the season. But he's shown that when he can put all 16 games together, like last season, that he can have a monster season. What he had, what, almost 1,900 yards receiving. And I think the most important thing that you got to love about Julio Jones is just the sheer volume of targets. Every year of his career, not counting 2013 in which he was injured, his targets have increased. 94, 128, 60 in the 2013 injury year, then 163, and last season, 203 targets. You just got to love that volume.
Yeah, that's a ridiculous number. I mean, 200 targets, and I'm with you. I'm going to give Julio Jones and Mohamed Sanu the slight advantage. I like Mike Evans. I think he's among the top talents of wide receiver in the game as well, but I'm going to give Julio Jones a slight but clear advantage over him. And I like Sanu and the relative youth he brings over Vincent Jackson's age, who I believe is sitting right in his mid-30s, approaching 34 years old. He's got a ton of games under his belt. Can he stay healthy? I'm saying he misses at least a couple of games, so I'm giving Jones and Sanu the edge over Evans and Jackson straight up. You talked about Safarian Jenkins in there just a bit, and let's talk about the Tampa Bay tight end. In 12-team standard leagues, is he a number one tight end going into the season?
I have Safarian Jenkins ranked at number 16 in my tight end rankings right now. So I think he's just outside the top 15. He has that upside, that potential to definitely be a top 15 tight end and potentially crack the top 10. I mean, he only played 7 games in 2014. He caught 4 touchdowns in that span. Cameron Brate played 14 games and only had 3 touchdowns. So there's been talk that Jameis Winston and Cameron Brate have chemistry, and I think that's more of a proponent of Cameron Brate playing 14 games last year versus Safarian Jenkins only being healthy for 7. So initially you may see some of the receptions, you know, leached and ceded to Cameron Brate maybe the first couple weeks of the season, but I think as long as ASJ stays healthy, he's gonna be the number one tight end in that offense.
Yeah, I agree with that. I am. It's a question of health with Safarian Jenkins, that's for sure. I think he could be clearly a top 12 tight end if he gives 15, 16 games. That's a big question mark at this point. Like the quarterbacks in the NFC South, the lead running backs for each team, I believe, are pretty clear-cut as well. You got a Devonta Freeman, Doug Martin, Mark Ingram, and Jonathan Stewart. These are lead backs in their offense. How do you see those four stacking up against one another?
Well, if we go by my running back rankings, I have Devonta Freeman at number 7 with Doug Martin just behind him at number 8. Mark Ingram rounds out my top 10. And I have Jonathan Stewart all the way down at 19. I'm not big on Jonathan Stewart this year. Yeah, his injury history, his injury concerns, they scare me. I mean, he hurt his foot in the Super Bowl, and news has said that he's still that injury is still lingering with him coming into minicamps and stuff. So,
That was a re-aggravation of an injury that cost him the last 3 regular season games of last season. But he also, I mean, those first 13 games of the 2015 season, he was pretty much a stud.
Yeah. Jonathan Stewart has actually never started all 16 games in a season. He's been active for 16 in 3 of his seasons, and he's only rushed for 1,000 yards once. That was 1133 in 2009. And he's coming off a career high 242 carries. All these things spell disaster for me. The fact that he's already injured, has an injury history, and coming off a high volume of carries. I am avoiding Jonathan Stewart in all of my leagues.
Well, let's put that playing time into a bit of context. He was in a running back duo with veteran D'Angelo Williams, who's now moved on. That duo seemed to be around kind of forever in Carolina. As I said, D'Angelo Williams has now moved on. Jonathan Stewart has taken over the clear lead back. I'm going to say he's better going into the season, even foot injury concern, than the 19th running back. I think he's a top 15 with of course the injury risk. Stay with Carolina and talk about another guy coming off injury. Kelvin Benjamin, big hulking wide receiver, huge target for Cam Newton, went over 1,000 yards and 9 touchdowns in his rookie season of 2014, but missed all of last season, making the Panthers' run to a Super Bowl even more impressive. But Benjamin, can he reach those rookie numbers again, 2 years removed from them, coming off an ACL injury?
I think as long as Kelvin Benjamin is healthy, he has a very good chance of reaching those numbers. I have him coming in at number 17 in my wide receiver rankings, and I'm projecting him at right at 1,000 yards, which is just under what he put up in his rookie campaign with 8 touchdowns. So I think his ceiling is higher than those numbers. But I'm down on the Carolina Panthers this year.
I hear you, and that Super Bowl hangover, but I am above those numbers on Kelvin Benjamin. I think we're looking at 1,200 yards and the potential of 12 touchdowns. I think he does take a a step forward that took 2 years, but a step forward nonetheless. I think he cuts right into Greg Olsen's upside as a tight end, although I will say he's still a top five at the position. But Kelvin Benjamin, I can see as a top 10 wide receiver by the end of the year, minimum top 15. As long as he stays healthy, Cam Newton's going to find him. Let's talk about Greg Olsen a little bit. He's been one of the top tight ends in the game for a few years now. Is he still in that top five, as I said he was?
Oh, he's definitely. I have him at number two. I have him ahead of Jordan Reed just because Jordan Reed's injury concerns really scare me. Yeah, I think Kelvin Benjamin could eat into a portion of Greg Olsen's targets, particularly in the red zone. But I still think Greg Olsen is going to see a huge portion of those targets from Cam Newton, maybe a 50-50 split between the two of them. And last season, Greg Olsen, I think, only caught 7 touchdowns, and I'm pretty sure his red zone targets were not that high. I don't know if that was a proponent of defenses doubling Greg Olsen and there not being another threat at wide receiver like a Kelvin Benjamin for the red zone. But I don't think that's really going to affect Greg Olsen's value as much as people think. It's going to cut into his targets a little bit, but I think he'll still be effective. And Greg Olsen has played in all 16 games every year of his career, save for his rookie season, which he only played 14 games. So I've got Greg Olsen projected at just under 1,100 yards receiving and about 6 touchdowns.
Yeah, kind of contradicted my point a little bit, but I'll clarify it. Greg Olsen with Kelvin Benjamin in the mix had 123 targets in 2014. Without Kelvin Benjamin in the mix, he had 124 targets last season. I think the difference is here, the second year of Devin Funchess getting used to the NFL, I think he will also command some targets with Benjamin. Greg Olsen, yeah, I think it could cut into his value, but he's probably still going to see 90, 100 targets. But that would knock about 30 off of him last season. Let's talk about Funchess. Does this guy emerge a little bit more? He's a huge target. I mean, he even played some tight end in college. Where do you see his prospects? And should he be one of your three starting receivers in a standard 12-team league?
I'm not particularly high on Devin Funchess. I think, you know, his size and if his route running ability is improved, you know, transitioning from tight end to wide receiver, I think he could see an uptick in value. He had 473 receiving yards and 5 touchdowns in all six. He played 16 games last year. So I think, yeah, he has an upside maybe in the 650 to 700 yard range and could see an uptick in touchdowns. But with a Kelvin Benjamin coming back, that's going to take away some of those red zone looks. So I don't think Devin Funchess is a starter in a 12-team league. I think he's one of those sleeper candidates, you know, because he has a high upside, especially if there's an injury to Kelvin Benjamin or Greg Olsen. You see his value take a huge uptick. So, but in a standard league, he's a late-round sleeper for me.
Okay, yeah. I could definitely see a sleeper him as a sleeper candidate as well, maybe 8-9 touchdowns just given his size, but the overall yards and receptions, they may be held in check, as you said, by Benjamin and an Olsen. I think the guy who really stands to fall off in the Carolina passing game this season is Ted Ginn, who somehow caught 10 touchdowns last season. I don't really see him as a standard league guy. I mean, we're talking probably 16-team leagues before you start taking him in the late rounds, correct?
Oh yeah, at least 14, 16 team, and then even then he's just a flex consideration. Yeah, I think given that the entire Carolina Panthers receiving core stays healthy, Ted Ginn's one of those players that he may have one of those boom games where he catches one or two big 50 or 60 yard touchdowns, but you're not going to be able to predict that. So I think his fantasy value is going to drop off tremendously compared to last year.
Sure. Let's let that lead us into a segment. Let's give a little summary here. What we want to do is talk about some deeper leagues, dig down into the dirt, format, three receiver, two running back with a flex in maybe 14, 16 team leagues. Brad, you tell us whether these guys are a flex option or not. And let's start right where we were. Ted Ginn, flex on or flex off?
Flex off, most definitely.
Okay. In New Orleans, wide receiver Willie Snead.
I'm going to have to go flex off. His big boom games are going to be hard to predict.
So kind of similar to Ted Ginn.
Yes.
Into the Falcons backfield, the handcuff for Devonta Freeman. Tevin Coleman.
Flex on. I think he has a real good shot to eat into some of Devonta Freeman's carries and get a lot of goal line touches. So most definitely flex on.
Let's talk about it. With that in mind, let's talk about Devonta Freeman a little more. I'm hearing a lot of hype around him, and I don't mean in the good way, hype that he's going to be a bust. How do you see that?
I don't think he's going to be a bust per se. I mean, I have him at number 7 in my rankings, so not as high as some people, but a little higher than, you know, the haters out there. I just don't see him recreating that same the same statistics from 2015. I mean, he had 14 touchdowns last year. That's I think you're going to see some regression there. That's going to be where the real difference in his numbers from last season to this season. I've got him projected at about 1,000 rushing yards, which is about what he had last year. 7 rushing touchdowns, 400 receiving yards, and 2 receiving touchdowns. So I think the regression in touchdowns is going to tick his value down, and where he's going in a lot of drafts is he's overvalued.
Yeah, and I wanted to bring him up there because it specifically related to Tevin Coleman, who the Falcons drafted in last year's draft. He actually went into the starter looking fairly promising the first couple of weeks of last season. He got injured, got derailed. When he came back, it's almost like he was rushed back. But this season, I see Tevin Coleman's going to cut in maybe 8, 10, possibly 12 carries a game, some of that coming in the red zone. I think he's going to touchdown vulture Devonta Freeman a little bit. But I will say this about Freeman, whereas he might be in that 7, 8, 9 range in a standard league, he's one of those that takes a huge leap to me in a PPR, and I see him as a clear top 3 in that format. And if people don't draft him as that, I will end up with him.
Oh,
let's
I definitely agree.
Let's move on into our last player here and go to Tampa Bay. Another handcuff running back. This one for Doug Martin. Charles Sims, flex on or flex off?
Oh, flex on. Charles Sims is going to be a very useful player in PPR and standard leagues. He had about 1,000 total receiving yards last year and 4 receiving touchdowns. So I definitely say flex on.
Yeah, very involved in that passing game. I believe he caught north of 50 passes from Jameis Winston last year. PPR especially, he becomes even more of an option. Let's do the same thing we did with Devonta Freeman. Doug Martin, how do you see his prospects for this season? I mean, the guy, he's had a couple really big years. He's an injury concern as well. Where do you see him stacking up overall to the league?
Well, I've got Doug Martin at number 8, right behind Devonta Freeman in my running back rankings. Doug Martin has played in 16 games 2 times in his career, and when he plays in all 16 games, he rushes for 1,400-plus yards. Last season, he had trouble with ball security. He had 5 fumbles, which was the most among running backs. If he can get his ball security under control, I think he's looking at a 1,200 rushing yard season with 8 touchdowns on the ground, adding maybe another 200 receiving yards and maybe 1 touchdown through the air. I think he's got potential to be a top 10 running back for sure. I just don't think he recreates the same numbers that he had last season, which is why he comes in at number 8 in my rankings.
All right. Yeah, he's definitely the type of guy that could win you a week, 2, maybe 3 weeks. He could also sit on your bench injured 2-3 weeks. So he's worth a high-round pick, but yeah, beware. Let's move into our either-or segment, and we are college football fans. We've said that in the past. this either or is going to match up some former college conference rivals. Let's start with a couple of young receivers. One, the rookie out of Ohio State, Michael Thomas. You want him over the second-year guy to Michigan, Devin Funchess?
Most definitely. I am Michael Thomas over Devin Funchess, and it's not really close to me.
I tend to agree with that. A tight end position, and these are two guys that both came out of the Pac-12, one also a rookie. Austin Seferian-Jenkins or Austin Hooper?
Since it's 2016 and not 2017, ASJ all the way.
Yeah, even with my bold projection on Hooper, I have to say Seferian-Jenkins is probably looking at regular targets as long as he stays healthy week in and week out. And Hooper is a, in those dynasty leagues, I love him. You might be waiting on him a bit to start producing in redraft leagues this year. And here's the big comparison in the NFC South. This is an SEC matchup, one from Texas A&M, one from Alabama. I think I know where you're going with this, Brad, but let's hit it one more time. Mike Evans or Julio Jones?
You know I love SEC matchups. Definitely got to go Julio Jones over Mike Evans, and for me it's not close. I think Mike Evans is going to have a productive season, but Julio Jones, the sheer target volume, and in that Shanahan offense, he is going to be a stud. Might even have a 2,000 receiving yard season potential.
Wow. Well, it's definitely a lot closer for me. I love Mike Evans. I think he's a clear top eight guy going into the season. I'm going to go ahead and throw that out there. Julio Jones, yeah, I think he's a top one guy. That's my top guy. I would even consider him taking him first overall. Is that crazy, Brad?
Oh, definitely not crazy. There are four receivers that I would take in the top five picks in any draft, PPR or standard, and Julio Jones is definitely one of those four.
Okay. We're nearing the end here for this NFC South preview. Brad, any last bit of fantasy football advice for today?
Let's go back to Atlanta and Matt Ryan. I think Matt Ryan has real sleeper potential, especially if Atlanta's offensive line, which is much improved with the acquisition of Alex Mack, can stay healthy and keep him upright. I think he decreases his turnovers, increases his touchdowns, and is probably right in line with that 4,500 yards that he's had every single year in the last four seasons. And Matt Ryan has top 15, maybe even top 10 quarterback potential.
Yeah, and I've already agreed with you on that. And a big reason for my optimism is that addition of Alex Mack, which I will say is one of, if not the biggest offseason acquisition in this division and possibly the league. That's going to put a wrap on our NFC South preview. Please be sure to hit us up on Twitter with any comments, praise, or insults. We'll accept them. At FantasyFlexPod. For Brad Wallace, I am Nate Miller.
Flex Friday.